Namaste and welcome to the Living India podcast by Purvi Shah Paulini. On business topics and global events in connection with spirituality. Integral and sustainable change means to integrate this aspect on a deeper level as well. Because knowing people means knowing business.
So welcome back to our wisdom workshop. And first of all, I say hi, Julia. Nice to see you.
Hi, Purvi.
And I'm pleased and I feel very, very honored to welcome our today's guest, Violeta Pleshakova. I hope I spelled it correctly. Welcome,
hi.
Violeta.
Hi.
Hi.
So, Violeta, I would like to start to introduce you and maybe let you introduce yourself. So at first, I would like to speak out my profound gratitude for your friendship and for your presence on Earth. You call yourself a paradigm shifter, a spiritual mentor, an intuitive channel, and more other things. And I'm so very much intrigued by you as a person. I like your passion. I like what you do and your courage to express yourself and your very belief to the outside world and how you live spirituality. And in these means, I would like to know a little bit more about your path through life up until today. How did your family, your upbringing, your surrounding world support you and influence you in the way you feel, think, and act by today?
Thank you, Julia. And I want to start by reframing and explaining why I live out spirituality in terms of my interests and in terms of my paradigm shifter self-presentation. I talk about it on social media, and this is also my work in the world. And I always think I'm speaking out not for myself, I'm speaking out on behalf of others. Because in our modern world, there are so many people who don't trust their voice, who are conditioned to fit into social boxes, who think and they have been brainwashed to believe that they must follow linear paradigms that society provides for them, that this is what they must do in their work, this is how they must do their personal life. And it feels so important for me to be a paradigm shifter in the way I live and start those conversations and also demonstrate by walking the talk that you can craft your own path and that life, in fact, is non-linear. So we all have a choice. We are co-creators of our existence. And to me, being a paradigm shifter actually started when I was very young because I have a very inquisitive mind. You know, as children always do, they ask why? And for me, I was not only asking why, but I was also thinking, how can we do this differently? I would just see something and never take it at face value. I would be like, but why is this way? This doesn't make sense. Let's do this differently. This is another way of doing it. And so I could never rest. And I was always, I guess, given some indulgence by my family to explore. And I think I'm very lucky. I was brought up by six adults. So a pair of parents and two sets of grandparents, all living very closely, literally walking distance from one another. And I was always surrounded by adults, and my pursuits, especially my intellectual pursuits, were encouraged. Especially my grandfather on my father's side. He was a chemical scientist, he was a genius, an inventor, a paradigm shifter himself in biochemistry, and also a philosopher and a poet. So imagine what happens to a child when you hand them War and Peace when they are age 10, or when you start reciting Jean-Jacques Rousseau at family dinner when the child is 7 years old. So in a way, I was trained to ask big questions, and I was encouraged to ask big questions. And all my quirks and little weirdness as I was growing up, it was never judged by my family. It was later at school and rather with society and peers that I encountered some criticism, let's say, and that I had to fit in and I had to cut off some edges. Some of the rough edges, but I'm really grateful for the family I've had and for having been granted the space to be and to explore. And I think that is really, really, I'm very grateful for that and really, really lucky.
Thank you. You yourself name yourself as a citizen of the world, and you've explained right now where you come from, But I have the feeling when you speak that you feel home everywhere. It's just a vibration that comes over during while you speak.
That's very true, Purvi. That is so. I've been living in Germany for the last 13 years, but I would say half of those years I was away traveling. I had the joy of having lived in South Africa, in Johannesburg, just earlier this year. I was there in lockdown when the pandemic started. So half a year in Johannesburg, earlier in Cape Town. I've spent time on Bali. I've spent a lot of time in the Netherlands. And all of that has shaped me. So of course, I love going back to Moscow and to Russia, but anytime I go back or anytime I go anywhere, it's a little bit from the outside looking in, knowing that I never even wanted to come to a place and belong and blend in. Rather, I see myself as someone who is an amalgamation of many influences and many cultures. And I think I've met people like myself. I have friends who are like me, who are also citizens of the world. And I think there must be a separate state for people like myself, that we can be freed from the burdens of visa and residence permit and citizenship, just because I think for me, it's all about just realizing that yes, culture is important, but also seeing that we are all products of so many influences. And again, this is all about not being just boxed in one paradigm, but rather being open to all the influences and realizing that I think, and Yule, maybe that's how you see it as well, that our planet is our home. Our primarily relationship is with the planet. It is directly with Gaia, and only then with society and its rules. And to me, it's always about, As long as I'm cultivating my relationship directly with Gaia, with the planet, I can be at home anyway. Because, you know, I go for a walk every morning in Berlin, and I thought the other day, yeah, but that's the exact same thing I do when I'm in Amsterdam, the exact same thing I do when I'm in Johannesburg or when I'm in Moscow. Why? Because I need to connect with nature. So what does it matter where I am? It will always color my experience differently, but primarily I want to have the relationship with life and with the planet.
That's true. You have mentioned many, many cultures, and as I saw you hold a PhD in cultural studies, and I'm also an intercultural trainer partially. I do business development, so interculturality is also one of the main topics. And I would like to know how these cultures which you have mentioned right now have influenced you, and that you are doing also that what you are doing today.
Wow, that's a very interesting question. I've never given it thought. I think it's hard to say and hard to separate where one influence starts and another one begins. And how I see it, I think each culture taught me something. Let's say growing up in Russia taught me a lot about intrinsic spirituality. It taught me about magic that is woven into everyday existence, especially with fairy tales, with literature, with folklore, with little traditions that we have. And that, I think, what Russian culture did for me, it is to keep my spirit alive, to see magic in everything. In Germany, I think what it taught me is discipline. And I was resisting that lesson a lot. And it taught me the value of system and structure. And it has made me an adult. I think the blessing of Germany was that it forced me to grow up. It was like, all right, I need to take control of my admin. I need to take control of my finances for Finanzamt and so on. So that was the gift of Germany. One can joke and say that, oh yeah, Germans are so rigid. There are those rules and regulations. And I confess sometimes I also joke about it or make it wrong or be like, oh, come on, loosen up, you guys. But I also see the value of it, because if we only stay in our little box doing what we've always been doing and never stretch ourselves to go to other places who challenge our ways of being, we will never evoke those aspects of ourselves that are dormant. So that was Germany. Then I think South Africa taught me about being embodied and being in my heart. I've never ever met such lovely people anywhere. I mean, you are lovely people, of course, but South Africans, it's just out of this world. And have you been to South Africa, Purvi?
No, unfortunately not yet.
It's my favorite place on earth because the way they make you feel at home is just incomparable to anything else. I've never been treated like I'm part of the culture. I've never felt so welcome anywhere. And they taught me about going the extra mile for human relationships. That's what I learned from South Africans, the value of friendship and relationships and really, really caring, deeply caring. So that was South Africa. It always felt like home. You know, my first trip to Cape Town, I get out of the plane, and that was 10 years ago. I get out of the plane, I walk into the airport building, and there is this advertisement billboard that says, "Welcome to the mother city. Your soul will remember having been here already."
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, welcoming with open arms, and I was so stunned. And yeah, it felt like I'm coming back to some mother energy, the Gaia energy is so strong. I felt like a flower plugged into very fruitful soil. So I think each of those cultures taught me something, and it also challenged me, and it also showed me that in a way, I think interculturally, it's not this juxtaposition between adaptability and having your strong core. I think all my moving around, especially the last 2 years where I've spent some time as a digital nomad and there was a lot of fluctuation and instability, it taught me that when the world is spinning, who are you? Do you have that strong inner keel, that strong inner pillar that is unchangeable? Can you hold on to that core and that center and not lose yourself while the world is spinning, which I think is a pivotal lesson for these times where the world is spinning, and I think it will only continue to spin faster and faster and faster in more crazy ways. And unless we learn to hold our core, we will lose ourselves so easily. And with that, am I rigid in my core? Am I stuck in my ways? Or am I open to the influences of the world as they're coming in to shape me? So that to me is that dance between knowing who I am versus being adaptable and being flexible.
And this is explained so beautifully. And in this dance you talk about between cultures and between our inside and the outside world and everything, I would like to come back a little bit more to this term citizen of the world, because isn't this what we all are? And if we use this, doesn't it set the seed for spirituality and for the question, what is there beyond this world? Are there citizens of other worlds? So, but when we are on this planet Earth, living our life as human beings, feeling, speaking, acting, why would we bother considering the other ideas of worlds where we might have been before this life, or we might be living in the next life? So what is it all about? I mean, isn't it about living the moment in this world, as you say, being this resilient part while the world is spinning? So what is our purpose on this world, and how does it, yeah?
Oh, that's such a divine question. I just love it. You know, in my line of work, I come across a lot of people who identify as star seeds. So they claim, and I mean, we have no way of proving it, right? We just have to trust it or just use the concept. They say, oh yeah, I'm not actually from Earth. I just come in to participate in this evolutionary movement. And many of them follow the so-called ascension principle, meaning you grow spiritually and eventually you leave this world and you no longer incarnate on Earth. And after having spent 10 years in the industry of personal development, I observe some systemic trends. And what I see is the tendency to disembody, the tendency to use concepts like galaxy, universe, soul, past lives, reincarnation, to use those concepts as a way of spiritual bypassing, as a way of abdicating responsibility for building a happy, fulfilled, abundant life on Earth. So, from my perspective, I think it's very interesting to explore other worlds, and I can testify from my own experience. I work a lot with the Akashic Records and channeling and stuff. I think it can enrich us and show us that there is that we are multidimensional beings to show us that we have many gifts. And this reassures us in our weirdness. If we feel like, oh yeah, this aspect of me is weird, this doesn't fit in, it kind of gives an explanation and says, yeah, maybe you have had other lives and so on and so forth, but this is not a reason to ditch this life. And I'm always thinking, like, come on, people, is that not arrogant? Is that not a distraction from the work at hand? Because you are now here in this body. It means you have some work to do here, something to learn and something to give. I think it's always both ways. The purpose for me is always both ways. Something to receive in terms of learning and growth and evolution, and something to give in terms of teaching and using those gifts, even if they're multidimensional. And personally for me, it has been a journey of learning to not escape this reality, to always be here, to not lose myself in spiritual concepts, to not use meditation and other tools as a way of distracting myself really from day-to-day life. And I'm asking myself, in what way is meditation more spiritual than doing the dishes? It's not. Because as long as you can be present and aware in every waking moment, you're good. And I want to tell you one little story on that. I used to lead personal development trainings and coach trainings in the Netherlands, and we were doing it at a venue, and there was a cleaning lady. And what amazed me always is, out of all the people who are coaches and trainers and spiritual people who attended those workshops and trainings, I tell you, that cleaning lady was the most spiritual person of them all. Why? Because all the trainers and coaches would be in the morning like lamenting about long hours and how exhausted we are and my problems and my this and my ego and my that. And the cleaning lady, every morning she would show up and she would dance with her broom and she would be like, hello people, I'm so happy to see you. And she was being the light. There we are, sitting for 5 days in a closed room, working on ourselves, trying to become more conscious and more enlightened, while there is this person who never even read like one spiritual book in her life, who was already being the light. And I always tell people that I work with, show up there where you are at. Show up and be the light for the job that you currently have. Don't think that your job of being a yoga teacher is somehow better than your job as an assistant at the bank. It's not. Somebody has to do all those boring admin jobs as well, you know, because the new age trend is let's all quit our boring jobs and become yogis or become spiritual teachers. Well, then, I mean, who's going to be baking bread if everyone is a spiritual teacher these days? That's what I'm thinking.
You're
awesome.
So speaking deep from my heart. And I always say the actual meditation, if you call it, it takes place on a daily basis. You don't have to sit on a pillow and do anything. It might be a good support to get more training, but the actual thing happens there. And just do whatever you love to do. Do whatever you love to do and try to be good in that, whatever good means, as long as you're happy. That's really true. And I would also like to know, how can we take your thoughts now into the topic of leadership when you call yourself also a paradigm shifter? How can this philosophy that you have now implemented in today's life, which is so needed, that people stay in these crazy times centered? As you said, the world is turning and it's spinning, we felt it's spinning in a speed which is no more controllable. And what would you suggest, and what can you do for future leadership?
This is a big box to open, I think. Well, first, from my perspective, a leader is not connected with somebody's job, position, or title, just to make that clear. A leader to me is anyone who speaks to a community, anyone who represents anything in terms of values, and anyone who takes a stand, and anyone who says, all right, me, I'm going to change something. I'm going to take responsibility. So anyone theoretically can be a leader, even within a corporate structure, even if they are at the bottom of the corporate food chain. as long as they know that they have people that they are talking to. Because we all have our communities and we all show up in a way that represents who we are. And I think if I were to look at that, what is most important, what comes completely intuitively, and I didn't plan to say that, I would say to all leaders, get real. Get real. Meaning, start doing the inner work of looking at your own shadows and blind spots. Because leaders bring in so many projections, so many tainted perspectives to the workspace and to the community space, to the world. They think that their status of a leader absolves them of the responsibility for their inner world, but it doesn't. And what we have then is a tainted world of twisted mirrors where the world is run by wounded children. So I think that is essential to use this time of slowing down, this time of being rattled on a global scale for everyone to look at what are my blind spots, what are my shadows, what are some of my incomplete wounded parts that I need to complete such that I can be whole, such that I know that I'm bringing in pure space, that I'm not manipulating, that I'm not codependent, that I'm not, you know, bringing in expectations or I see there is a lot of codependency in leadership. There are a lot of leaders who have fantastic ideas, but who are not taking feedback. And I've experienced that personally, that people can be doing, even in the personal development space, absolutely amazing work. They develop methodologies or they have projects and concepts and so on, but they themselves surround themselves with codependent supporters who are not calling them out. And I think it's very problematic. I think there needs to be more realness and more openness and more inner work and ultimately more consciousness. That is conscious leadership, which is a big buzzword these days. And to me, conscious leadership is about looking at yourself first and looking, where am I being still owned by my reactions, by my triggers, by my fears, and starting to get really honest about that and doing this work. And embarking on that inner journey such that we can have more purity in the space.
It's beautiful. I like to call this coming home and finding the home within ourselves and also tidying up our homes, tidying up our lives, and that we can encounter the world with as less noises from the outside world as possible. So I do this by the body, right?
Yes.
So how do you work if someone actually would come to you to support them in doing so?
In my private practice, I work in a very intuitive way. So I have studied ontological coaching, so the classical coaching according to International Coach Federation with all the regulations and so on. And then I have also studied energy work and past lives work. And I think, you see, this is also one of my paradigm shift moments. I don't believe in methods. I don't believe in just taking a method and running it in a book, because then it shows lack of self-trust on behalf of the practitioner, where they are centering the method and then saying, okay, I'm doing this type of coaching and I'm doing this type of energy work. And they never question, is this really applicable to the work at hand? Is that really what the client needs? And so then they go with their little protocol and they start using the client to complete their protocol instead of using the protocol to serve the client. I also see in the German coaching space, for example, everything is so methodology oriented. People write long resumes and CVs saying, I trained in this, I trained in that, I trained in that. Well, it's fascinating that you trained on all that, but does that necessarily make you a good coach? No. Because I think to me, it's all about, again, being real, being able to create very pure space, that there are no projections, no distractions, and then just really move with the client intuitively, looking, okay, what is the issue? What is the root? What do they really need? So to me, it unfolds in the moment, and there's a lot of just guided journeys where I take them on journeys. We travel into that metaphorical world where we do the work. We do a lot of energy work, and then we also do some strategy work too, depends. And to me, it's all intuitive and client driven with regards to what does the person need. And then I just pull whatever tools I have in the moment and support them with that. So there is, I think there is just a lot of trust and a lot of me having trained in many modalities and having worked with a lot of people that gives me certain confidence. And I think the key is being non-attached, completely non-attached to how it's going to go, to what's going to transpire, and trusting that all clients that I encountered to meet almost feels like there is on some level already an agreement between us that I'm just making myself available as a vessel to help them. And they are doing the work. I'm just facilitating. I'm just catalyzing. I'm just holding the space so they can relax and that they can download all the insights that are already in the making for them. And then, of course, I also love doing a lot of group work where I train people in using some of those concepts and train them in how to manage their energy, for example. I train them in how to trust their intuition. And I love doing trainings very much. And in my other business, the Firepower Group, which I co-founded in South Africa with an amazing business partner, Yvonne Johnston, who is a very experienced master coach, we do trainings, leadership development trainings, actually in corporate, where we do a lot of inner work. And we do business trainings as well, which is all about inner work. So they think they're coming to get trained in business strategy, but what we end up doing is talking to them about their shadows and blind spots and allowing, giving them the space to inquire in a different way. Because again, it's not about tools, it's not about methods, it's not about what you know, it's about who you are.
It's very impressive what you were saying, and I totally go with you that just going after the book and going after the method is really something typical, and after that it's no more intuition, because we just take a book and try to follow that and you get lost in actually the rules, and this is very true. What I hear from the beginning is when we started speaking about you are the world citizen, there are no boundaries, and so on. It's everything about connection. Connection to oneself. Mm. And once if you are connected to yourself, you are automatically, you know what it means to be connected to others. So are there some qualities that are needed or need to be developed or which are already there that implement a faster paradigm shift? Or do you believe, because everyone says right now, we need to change very fast because, for example, climate change, politics and economics, they have it in the hand to change something. Mm. And if you don't do that in the next 20, 30 years, we are no more going to exist, or no, in a very near future, in the next 1,000 years, the humanity is not going to exist. What would you suggest?
Thank you, Purvi, for that. I've been thinking about that. I had a very interesting client session about that yesterday. And I think it's all about being willing to sit with the void. I will explain what I mean. In our current world, with social media and with technology, we are bombarded by distractions. And we all have developed coping mechanisms and numbing mechanisms that take us out of ourselves, out of our core, out of our connection with Gaia, and desensitize us to our own pain and to the pain of our planet. If we just look at why are we in the situation that we are currently experiencing? Because we have not been honest with with ourselves about what's going on. We have pushed it away and pushed it away and pushed it away with that, oh no, I'm gonna deal with that later. Yeah, it's like, you know, those notifications on the laptop that pop up and say, you need to restart your computer to install updates. It's like we have been always pushing, remind me tomorrow about the very necessary update of our collective consciousness and our collective blueprint that we have to install. And I think the reason why we have not been doing this work and have not been changing fast enough and now find ourselves in the space where we have to catch up is because we have lost the ability to be with ourselves and to be with the void. We are distracting ourselves. We always think that we need to be doing something. We are filling up our days with unnecessary activity. We are filling up our mind space, clogging it actually with a lot of input. People listen to gurus on YouTube instead of just sitting down in silence and asking their intuition, what do I know about this? What do I need to know? So people lost connection to their personal intuitive channel. They got plugged in and hooked onto external wisdom systems. And I think the way back is for us to stop distracting ourselves, to look at all the ways in which we have been numbing and distracting and lying to ourselves, and start stripping away layers of that onion. For example, less time on social media, less time on Netflix, less time with just busy work, and more time in nature with ourselves to live a simple life, to remove all those distractions, to come back to our own inner wisdom. And that to me is about getting real. It's catching up with ourselves. And with that, learning to be with discomfort, learning to be with the pain that then starts to resurface, or learning to be with the creative impulses that start to resurface, because so many people are just regurgitating all the old content, and they are regurgitating the same things that are going on in personal development industry, just under a different source. And as it all starts to feel like one big gigantic bubble that is going to burst at some point, because people are not being real. So I think, people, just clear your desk, clear your mind, come back to yourself, start talking to yourself, start talking to life, be present with your dishes, be present with your dirty socks, be present with your wobbly thoughts and inner anxieties, and just be with that. We need to rebuild our relationship with life and with ourselves.
You beautifully speak from my heart. And I think now the interesting part is how do we create the new perspective, that the step back, which seems to be a step back, looks like a step forward, because you know, human beings always want to strive for more. So how can we create this notion that going less is going more, or being in the void is being in everything? Having nothing means having everything. So how can we change this notion?
Well, I don't know. I think I don't have an answer. I don't have a formula for that, because I think anything we would say would be just a concept. I think the value is in living with that question. Just, I think, at the core of coaching, where we just start asking ourselves better questions, and then not jumping immediately to an answer, because that is what is problematic. We ask beautiful questions, and then our answers come not from guidance, they come from the mind. They come again from our inability to be in the void of not having an answer yet. It's like, it's more organic. It's more from the feminine. It's like we are in the dark womb of Gaia, or the universal womb. And from that womb, the question that you are asking is like a seed that is planted in the womb. And then there is this gestation period of not knowing, but trusting that new answers are coming, and just nourishing it, being in that void, being in the darkness, and allowing the answer to transpire, allowing it to be born, not pushing it. We need to stop that obsession with, I want answers now. It's not like you can go and Google it, how to change the world. It doesn't exist on the mental level. It has to resurface from a more mysterious, liminal, interdimensional space. That's how I see it.
True.
I think that's our work.
Wow.
I think this was really a wonderful last word from you, Violeta, and I'm really inspired, and I'm really honored to have you as an interview partner today and to get to know you. And I thank you so much to give the insights about your work, about your thoughts, and what do you think the next step or a step could be to go back in order to get forward. And I thank you so much for your time and being with us.
Thank you so much. I loved your questions, and I'm sure I'm going to keep thinking about our conversation this week a lot. So may this serve the people who listen and would love to hear insights that transpire from that. Thank you.
Thank you, Violeta. Thank you for being. Thanks.